Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Well Women Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Laura Pfeiffer, and it has been quite a while since I have recorded a podcast episode, so I thought that it was only fitting to have this episode be a little bit about kind of what I've been doing and give you some updates, as well as talk about a topic that kind of fits into my updates. I'm going to talk a little bit about getting sick in pregnancy, colds and flus, and kind of how to best manage that. So let's just jump right in. The last time I did a podcast episode, it was in the summer 2019, and that feels like a lifetime ago. Since then, I have had a baby. I haven't decided when I am releasing this episode, but right now we are early 2020, and so I had my baby November 8th, 2019. We are all doing well, and he is healthy and doing amazing, so that is good, but there are obviously some struggles with being a new mom, and we can probably discuss that in upcoming episodes as some topics. But we'll just start out with I have written my prescribing license in the summer, so that was kind of why I was slacking on bringing you guys some content, because I was studying as a naturopathic doctor. For some of you who don't know, practiced in Ontario, Canada. And basically, we get licensed as an ND, and we have a specific scope of practice. And once we are licensed, our scope of practice kind of ends at doing things like B12 injections, prescribing things like desiccated thyroid and progesterone, bioidentical progesterone, bioidentical estrogen. And so I had to write and study for an additional exam in the summer so that I could provide those services for my patients. So now since the summer of 2019, I have been able to have access to those things, which has been amazing for my patients and for my practice, because I just have more tools to be able to help my patients with. So that's amazing. And then after I wrote that exam, I was pretty pregnant by the end of the summer. I was due in November, so my last couple months were in the fall. My due date was actually November 14th. I ended up having my son on November 8th, so we were 39-1, and so 6 days early, which I was more than ready for. But as you can imagine, things were pretty hectic. And one of those things I dealt with, and one of the reasons why I wasn't recording episodes or doing content or really doing anything, I was wrapping up my clinical, making sure my patients kind of were ready for my maternity leave, which I will be coming back from shortly, or might be back already by the time this episode is out. But just kind of crossing my T's and dotting my I's, so to speak. But one thing I struggled with at the end of pregnancy for what seemed like forever was a cold. And I thought I did everything in my power to prevent getting sick during pregnancy, because as you know, when you're pregnant, your immune system is depressed. So you don't have the same ability to fight infections, colds, flus, that sort of thing. That's why they recommend if you're sick, you want to stay away from pregnant women, infants, and older people, because those are the people who have suppressed immune systems or sometimes no immune system at all. And so when a pregnant person gets sick, they can sometimes be sick for a really long time, and it makes it really difficult, because when you're pregnant, there's a lot of things that aren't safe in pregnancy or don't have a lot of research. And I've mentioned this before, if you've been following my Instagram or you know me or you see me as a patient, that I am very conservative when it comes to treating pregnant women, because I like to see the hard evidence. I like to see the research behind whatever I'm giving my pregnant patient, that I can be confident that it's going to be safe for them and their baby. And the reason this is hard is because it is truly just unethical to do research on pregnant women, because what they would have to do to get that hard data is they would say, okay, half of these people who are pregnant are going to receive this treatment, and half of these people who are pregnant are not going to receive the treatment. And then at the end of the pregnancies, we'll see whose babies are doing the best, basically. We could look for specific outcomes, but really that's unethical, and you can completely understand why no woman would choose to be a part of a study like that at all. Because it doesn't make any sense to put your baby at risk. So, having said that, what we usually do is we say, okay, we do what's called retrospective studies, and we basically ask a bunch of women, when you were pregnant, did you do XYZ? Or when you were pregnant, how much did you eat XYZ? Or how much did you do XYZ? And based on that, they look at the health of the baby. They say, does your baby have any health problems? Were they, let's say, in the NICU? Were they small for gestational age? Were they preterm? All of these sorts of questions, whatever they're looking for in the outcomes. And then they will kind of correlate that data to what these women might have done in common. So you can see why you would be a little bit conservative or skeptical when it comes to treating pregnant women, and why treating colds and flus in pregnancy is tough for a number of reasons. So like I said, I had a cold which felt like it lasted months. It definitely lasted 4 solid weeks. And really, anytime you're around anyone who's sick when you're pregnant, you are going to get sick. So it's an unfortunate reality. And being pregnant in the fall, I had actually planned for my baby to be born at the time he was born. I actually really enjoyed the time frame of when I was pregnant, because I wasn't super pregnant in the summer and all these sorts of things. But two things I didn't consider was being pregnant into the fall, which is obviously cold and flu season begins. And then the second thing I didn't consider is having a baby in the winter, which is difficult for a number of reasons. So going back to the colds and flus, I just wanted to talk about a few things that I did and that you can do when you're pregnant to help reduce the risk of getting the colds and flus, but also if you actually happen to get hit with a cold or a bug, things that you can do. So I will preface this, like I always preface this, you need to speak to your healthcare provider. If you are pregnant, especially you need to speak to your naturopathic doctor, your midwife, your medical doctor, whoever you are seeing, to make sure what you are doing is safe. These are the things that anecdotally I did and that I've found to be safe in the research, but you definitely need to speak to someone in terms of knowing the right dosages, as I can't give that type of advice over this sort of medium. So the first thing is obviously proper hand washing, preventatively, making sure that literally you're going kind of above and beyond for any time you would wash your hands normally. Wash them again if you're pregnant. That's going to be kind of your first line of defense. The second thing that I found to be really helpful is getting in lots of fruits and vegetables. And sometimes you can find that really difficult at the beginning of pregnancy when you're feeling really nauseous and gross. You don't want salad. And at the end of pregnancy, depending on A, when you're pregnant, and B, how you're feeling. For me, at the end of pregnancy, in the fall, so in like September, I guess that was the end for me, September, October, I was feeling exhausted all of the time, because you're just very large and you just feel tired and you might have heartburn. And for me, everything that I ate caused heartburn. So it wasn't a matter of having that incentive to eat, oh, when I eat healthy things, I don't get heartburn. And when I eat bagels, I get heartburn. Unfortunately, everything gave me heartburn. So I found that the best thing to do in that particular case was eating a lot of smoothies, because it was just condensed nutrients, and I knew that I could get in those vitamins that I required by just blending it. I have been self-proclaimed a really crappy smoothie maker. I always make smoothies that look gross. They taste gross. I never combine things for flavor. I always tend to add things in for just purely nutrition value, which there's nothing wrong with, but ultimately, you don't want to have to kind of suck back a smoothie that you're hating every second of. So one thing I did and one thing I found was actually from Costco. And you can find them a lot of places, but this one specifically was from Costco. The brand is called Packd, P-A-C-K-D. And basically, these are frozen fruit and vegetable combinations that are good for smoothies, but they also come with a superfood pack, and it depends on which one you choose, but some of them have things like maca and chia seeds and flax seeds and hemp hearts and those sorts of things. There's one that has spirulina in it. I would not recommend that in pregnancy, but just make sure you are looking at the ingredients. But these can be a really good way to just be able to make a smoothie really quick. The other things I've used are Loblaws, has these in the frozen food section. Again, they have pre-made smoothie packs as well. So you can just put that in your blender with some water, blend it up, add some protein powder or collagen powder. I just wouldn't add anything that has a greens powder in it because, again, a lot of these greens powders have extra herbs, things like spirulina, things I wouldn't recommend in pregnancy. So I would just kind of stay away from that. Try to just use whole fruits and vegetables. You can't really go wrong with that. Flax seeds, great. Chia seeds are great. Hemp hearts are great because that's also going to help you poop. And a lot of women suffer from constipation at the end of pregnancy. So getting in that water and fiber can be really, really beneficial, along with those nutrients to help you just prevent you from getting sick in general. And so that would be my main thing. The second thing, again, being pregnant in the fall, having smoothies and cold drinks is really tough, but I found making soups and stews was more helpful. Soups and stews can sound like they're time consuming and annoying, and a lot of people just think, okay, well, I'm either going to spend a ton of time making a soup or I'm going to use the crock pot and have mushy food. And that really doesn't have to be the case. I found if you own an Instant Pot, that was the key for me, is being able to put a lot of vegetables in broth and cook it for a short period of time. Usually I would do manual 15 minutes. I literally would add anything. For example, I would cut up an onion just like in half, put the onion in, cut up carrots in chunks, put them in, like literally any vegetables I had, I would try to put in whole. If not, I would just cut them up in order to fit physically. And then I would cook it for about 15 minutes on manual, take off the lid, puree it with a hand blender or hand mixer. Yes, a hand blender. Puree it with a hand blender, and then literally that's it. All you do is kind of add your salt, add your pepper. If you have like a vegetable cube or beef cube you want to add for extra flavor, that's kind of up to you. And then if you want to add things like rice or pastas or anything, I would usually do that after, or chicken or anything like that. But then you have soup that's ready and it's easily accessible, easily digestible. So it's not going to give you heartburn. Like I said, that's something that I struggled with at the end of pregnancy, and a lot of people struggle with throughout pregnancy. So that's some good tips in order to keep you healthy. Bone broth specifically, if you do not know how to make it, look it up because it's amazing. It has collagen. It gives you healthy gut benefits, healthy immune system benefits, healthy skin. It's really quite fantastic. So that's kind of staying healthy, making sure you're taking your prenatals. So again, talk to your naturopathic doctor about that. But the one I use is called Prenatal Sap by NFH. So if you are my patient, you already know this. And there's a variety of reasons why I use that prenatal, and that you can find actually in another podcast where I talk about pregnancy and the things no one tells you about. So if you're newly pregnant, that might be an episode that's good for you to listen to. Because I kind of aired out all my grievances at the beginning of pregnancy and talked about a whole lot of things. So you can head there if you're interested in that. And then things I would add for sickness, cold and flu. So one of my number one things I do with my pregnant patients is I test their vitamin D levels. The reason I do that is because, number one, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. So I know that everyone thinks, or everyone will read about, the fact that all Canadians are vitamin D deficient. And if you live in Canada, you are automatically vitamin D deficient. And while that might be common, and while that actually might be true, that doesn't necessarily mean that you know how much you need. I have some patients who are mildly deficient. I have some patients who are not deficient, but they're not in a sufficient range. And I have some patients who are extremely deficient. The only way I know this is by testing. Symptomatically, you can't tell if somebody is vitamin D deficient. And even if you suspect that that could be the causative factor in what's going on, It may or may not be, and we don't know to what extent. So the problem is if I'm dosing vitamin D in a way that I know is going to increase levels, that can be dangerous for somebody who has levels that are actually on the cusp of being normal. You can actually overdose them. And for someone who's extremely deficient, we're going to need to dose way more than somebody who is just below sufficiency. So you want to make sure that A, what you're doing is actually doing something. So a lot of people don't want to pay for a blood test to test their vitamin D, but really you're wasting your money in getting a supplement that's not working. So you're either getting something on one end, you're getting a supplement that you don't need, number one. Number two, you're actually possibly putting yourself into an overdose type situation, which is dangerous. Or you're actually buying something and you're dosing so low, maybe 1,000 international units, which is usually one drop. You're dosing so low that A, if you're deficient or not sufficient, you're not doing anything. You are keeping your levels the same. So that's not helpful. You're just kind of flushing money down the drain. And I mean, if your levels happen to be completely normal, that one drop actually might be great in keeping those levels normal. But there's really no way to find out, no way to know. And there's a ton of great research in vitamin D and pregnancy. You can look at a lot of my Instagram posts. I talk about it. But there's a lot of research in infant health and mom health during pregnancy in having healthy vitamin D levels. So another thing I would do on top of the vitamin D testing and treating appropriately is adding in some vitamin C. So you do have vitamin C in your prenatal, so you do need to check with your healthcare provider the maximum amount of vitamin C you can take, and make sure that your vitamin C doesn't have anything else in it. I know a lot of vitamin C powders and things like that will have other herbs and other nutrients that may or may not be safe, so you need to make sure that you're kind of checking with that. So vitamin C and vitamin D are kind of the core ones I would use. I've spoken about echinacea before with respect to pregnancy, and I don't love the research, especially in first trimester, because it just isn't strong enough for such a critical time in your pregnancy, in my opinion. However, there are products that claim to have done the research, and they actually market their products and have on the label for pregnant and breastfeeding women, which is fine. And if you choose to take that, it will probably be fine. In my patients, I don't usually recommend they take echinacea until at least the second or third trimester. In the first trimester, we try to do more of a hands-off approach whenever we can. And then if your sickness does come with a fever, it is important to kind of weigh the pros and cons of a fever in pregnancy and taking Tylenol, right? Because Tylenol is considered safe in pregnancy, and there is a time and a place to take Tylenol and when Tylenol is appropriate. So again, speak with your healthcare provider to kind of discuss those pros and cons. If you're a patient of mine, we can talk about it. But it really comes down to looking at, we're always looking at the benefit and the pros and cons of what we are trying to treat and how we're trying to get there. And so if the fever is more dangerous to the fetus than the actual Tylenol, then it would be worth taking in that scenario. But if you're the type of person that's just suffering from headaches throughout your pregnancy, a headache, unfortunately or fortunately, is not harmful to your fetus. So then it's a matter of asking yourself, is it worth taking something like Tylenol? And so that's all I'll say about Tylenol and its safety in pregnancy. And so what I found is in pregnancy, especially near the end, or some people have it for their entire pregnancy, you can get what's called rhinitis of pregnancy. Basically what that is where your nasal tissue will swell. And so you'll basically have a stuffy nose. And so this can actually last your entire pregnancy, which can be discouraging. It can make it hard to sleep because you're not breathing. You're already uncomfortable sleeping because you are large and you're propping yourself up and you have supports under your stomach. And so this can just lead to the non-sleeping issue of pregnancy. So this is something that really needs to be treated. What I did and what I found really, really effective was getting a nasal saline nasal rinse. And so I have a neti pot at home, and I honestly don't usually recommend a neti pot specifically to my patients, because I find that the flow of the neti pot, from personal experience, the flow of the neti pot can't be controlled. So it tends to be really, really fast. And what ends up happening as a result is it can actually cause dizziness because the water is flowing way too quickly. So what I do recommend is getting the, so if you go to Shoppers Drug Mart or literally anywhere, there is the Neel Med Sinus Rinse, and you can actually get that. It's a plastic bottle, comes with saline rinse, and then you literally just put it in at your own flow, and that was a lifesaver. Doing that daily with the saline rinse not only helped with my cold, but actually helped prevent future colds and really kept my sinuses really clear for my pregnancy. And lots of people will have teas and things like that when they're sick. They make an echinacea tea. Again, use at your own discretion. Speak to your healthcare provider if that's something that makes sense for you. Personally, I actually avoided most teas when I was pregnant, other than your kind of run-of-the-mill Earl Grey, because of the lack of research on some of the herbs in pregnancy. Third trimester, I was a little bit more lenient on myself because I knew the risk benefit of some of the herbs. But other than that, I was pretty cautious, and I am pretty cautious with my patients. Again, you'll notice with my cold and flu, I didn't mention any herbs other than echinacea, and you heard my kind of discretion with that. But I think that there is not a ton of research on a lot of herbs for colds and flus, and a lot of them in fact are contraindicated in pregnancy for a number of reasons. And so making sure you're cooking with foods can be a better option, like things like garlic we know are good for the immune system. Cooking with that rather than taking it can be a really good option. And lots of hydrotherapy can actually be good as well. You can do a little bit of a warming socks. So if you have never heard of them, some people refer to them as wet socks, some people refer to them as warming socks, other people refer to them as magic socks if they are treating kids. And so really what you do is you take like a cotton sock and you soak it in water and you wring them out completely. You put them on your feet before you go to bed at night, and you put over top of those, you put a wool sock or a really thick, like one of those root socks, the cabin socks. Just a big thick sock over top. And really what's happening is it draws the congestion down from your head down to your feet. Your body is also stimulating your immune system to warm up your feet. And so that kind of helps to reduce congestion and helps boost your immune system. And now a lot of people from a Chinese medicine perspective have kind of reservations about doing anything with respect to the feet in pregnancy. So again, speak to your healthcare provider. Really, my take-home point was to kind of tell you guys about my experiences and what I typically do for my patients when they are sick during pregnancy, or what I would recommend. But you do need to make sure you're speaking to your healthcare provider no matter what, because again, everyone's pregnancy is different. Some people have different risks or different factors that come into play that would make me choose one intervention over another, or make me not choose a specific intervention depending on what else would be going on with that person's pregnancy. So that's kind of all I wanted to let you guys know about colds and flus, and hopefully for anybody who is currently in that state of pregnancy, feeling sick, hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit of hope that there are some things that you can take, some things that you can do. There's a lot more things that you can do postpartum when breastfeeding or not breastfeeding. So just know that it does come to an end, and when you give birth, things, those types of symptoms are usually completely gone. So that is the plus. Going forward, I want to talk a little bit about childbirth. If you have seen my Instagram stories, you know my birth story. In the next episode, I kind of want to talk a little bit about childbirth trauma and the postpartum visits. So I want to dive into that a little bit deeper. So I will save that for another episode. As always, if you guys have any questions, always reach out to me. You can send me an email, laura@laurapyfer.com. Be sure to follow me on Instagram @DrLauraND. my Instagram stories will probably be a lot more frequent now that I am getting back into the swing of things. As always, if you have questions or you want to hear something on the podcast, let me know, send me a message. But going forward, I have lots of fun topics that I want to talk about, I'm excited to talk about, and can't wait to share all the information with you. Don't forget to head to wherever you listen to your podcast and rate, review, and subscribe. And I will talk to you guys later. Bye.